Hello and welcome to another episode of Black on Black Talks, a podcast shining a light on talented creative practitioners and entrepreneurs of colour. In addition to talking about the exciting work our guests have been doing and the success they've been seeing with it, the aim is to go a bit deeper and pull out the vulnerability and rawness that make our guests' journey unique. As creators and entrepreneurs and most of all humans, we are all three-dimensional, and so our stories are too, more than our social media profiles may allude to. Whether it's sleepless nights, anxiety and or depression, loss, imposter syndrome or money worries, our guests will take us on their journey. This week, Black on Black talks to Aisha Ayoade. Aisha is co-founder of an art platform called Yellow Zine and copywriter at a sustainability consultancy. She's an advocate and activist for real diversity and inclusivity in the creative industry and expresses this through varying creative and professional outlets. This week, Aisha and I spoke about starting up small, financial worries and starting a business, run-ins with HMRC, and speaking confidently about your creative practice to manifest success.
I feel like in the creative world, people just kind of say that there's not really a lot of transparency. Like, you see the end product and you see like the final thing, but the whole journey, you don't know what it is, and it just seems completely unattainable because everyone seems to have fallen into this really cool job and they just happened to get this partnership.
I remember I was watching a Post Malone interview, and he was like, oh yeah, I dropped out of school and went to sleep on my friend's sofa in LA, and then the next day someone saw his tweet and then he became a millionaire. You were not sleeping on someone's sofa and then became a millionaire.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. I don't know why it is.
Because remember when it was like GCSEs and someone goes, I haven't even studied. Yeah. Like, surely you want to be like, man, I had such a hard time getting here.
Yeah. But like, I think it's that, like, because people will think you're smarter
it's easy.
Yeah, if it's like, I haven't even studied, like, oh my God. And I think it makes it feel more exclusive because that you're like,
only a certain type of person can do this.
Yeah, by saying that I haven't studied, it means that you can't do it because you know that you wouldn't be able to get here without any studying. But I mean, I can do it because I haven't studied. So it's like, I don't know. But then part of me doesn't think people are that selfish. So I don't know what it is.
But I think it might not even be like so thought about.
Yeah.
But like, taking it back to that like GCSE thing, like obviously when you reduce it down, it is like, oh, you can't do this, but you don't think that when you say it. I think it's more of just like a pride thing and an ego thing, because again, everyone has an ego, and it is easier to try and tell people that you haven't put as much effort into something and for it to go well than to say, I'm putting a lot of effort into this thing, and then it flops.
Potentially goes wrong. It's a bit of a defense mechanism as well. Like, you want to be able to like kind of bounce back from it because like, you didn't put that much work.
I didn't care about it anyway.
Your buzz anyway, I didn't care. No, it's so true.
Yeah.
So true. And that's what we tried to do with the web series. It's called In the Industry. Like, we haven't done as many, it's like just online.
Is it on the Yellow Zine?
Yeah,
website?
On the website. We haven't done as many as we'd like to do because kind of just like, we started it and then got interrupted with like a whole other thing. And then kind of stopped it, but we're just kind of going across the creative industry. So like art curators or people that work in advertising that are account execs or strategists or anything that's in the creative industry. It doesn't have to be necessarily artistic. But anything, so people can just know what it is. Because I'm a copywriter, but before I was a copywriter, I didn't really know what a copywriter did.
Me too.
With my job, I applied to be an account exec.
Okay.
And then, because that's what I knew what, I knew what that was.
So what is an account exec?
So say if you have, you're in an advertising agency and then you have like an account, so your client is Pepsi.
Yeah.
So the account exec is basically the middle person between your agency and Pepsi.
They take care of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, basically. So, like, I will, as an account exec, I will speak to you, Pepsi, and say, oh, this is, like, what we're trying to do. This is what the creatives come up with. This is what the strategies come up with. How much are you going to pay us? And then I take it back to my agency. Like, this is how much they're trying to pay. This is what they think, the direction they think it's going in.
So that's kind of like a link with like business development, kind of.
Yeah. They do like all the new biz stuff and trying to get new business for the agents.
Amazing.
But I'm not really good at that.
And why aren't you good at that?
To be fair, I don't think I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
I could do it if I needed to, because I did an internship and I think I did pretty well in my internship. Yeah. But I'm not passionate about that. It was kind of just felt like I was just doing a job to get. Like money and survive, but then in my interview where I work now, all I did was like talk about Yellow, talk about all this writing that I'd done, talk about, oh, in my spare time just do a bit of like journalism for people if they want it, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, do you want me a copyright? And I was like, if you want.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I just kind of like, they told me, but then I had to research like what is a copywriter?
Yeah. And this is a thing that I think is also missing, especially for younger people, it's knowing what all these jobs are. Because the thing is, I remember being at school and teachers saying, oh, you don't even know what job's going to exist when you finish school or come out of uni. And that is really true right now. Mm-hmm. Like, at school, you don't get told what a copywriter is.
No.
You don't get told what an account exec is. Yeah. Those aren't jobs that are at the...
Yeah, in they're not the, in the curriculum.
The careers fair or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so... it is really important, that project that you're doing, to kind of like highlight what roles there are, because also when we know what roles there are, we don't feel as trapped. And then the other thing is, in encouraging young creatives to figure out what their skills are, because there can be someone who doesn't know the name. So say someone just loves, I don't know, they love chatting. They have a little podcast with their mates or they're just chatting all the time. They could be a radio presenter. But they don't know what where their skills match up to which jobs. So yeah, that's really sick. And so, like, there you go.
I don't know if you know, but we've literally just finished a program called Night School. Which is so basically sick. Like all about that and like getting people to know what jobs are out there. And we have people who are like, they really like finding out what's going on in culture. And they just like in touch with like just the world right now and like what people are listening to, what people are laughing about, what people are into. And then obviously that is strategy. Like when you're in the ad world or the industry or whatever, that means you're like a cultural strategist. Mm-hmm. So like it's just something that you're just connecting the dots.
For sure.
Yeah, it was really
that
cool.
Sounds amazing. So tell us a bit more about Night School and how that came about and how it went.
Okay, so let's start from the actual beginning.
Yeah.
So the beginning was, so we had the in the industry thing. So we've wanted to break down those barriers in terms of like defining what jobs are and easing like the vision into a particular route.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to manifest that into something that was also like physical.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't just exist on the website. So we didn't do anything about that. We just kind of had that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the agency where my brother works, they wanted to do something to increase diversity in the industry. And then they approached my brother and were like, oh, would you partner with us on, like, we want to do something, we don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, oh, actually, we want to do something, and we don't know what it is. So it was just that, like, the partnership was literally, like, nepotism-ish, because my brother worked there. Like, it's not like we, like,
approached them.
Yeah, like, we approached them, or they approached us, really. It was that, like, he worked in the building and knew someone.
Who the boss was, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So... Neither us or them had done any sort of like mentorship scheme before. So we had lots of meetings. Obviously I work full time. So I had to like beg my boss to like let me leave work early so I can go to someone else's workplace and try and figure out how to do this mentorship scheme. But my boss is amazing.
Okay. So that was fine.
Yeah.
And did you have to like make up that time ever or?
Yeah, so what I'd do actually is I'd come in early and leave early.
Okay.
So I was still working the same amount of hours.
Yeah, but just a bit earlier.
But yeah, so like, yeah, I'll just have like meetings and we were just kind of like, what should this program actually be aiming to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided it should be about like, yeah, that thing about defining what a role is,
mm-hmm.
and how to get into those roles, mm-hmm. and actually seeing people in that role and
what they do
and how they got into the role. So we knew that we wanted to have loads of people involved, so like producers, directors, journalists, mm-hmm. artists, whatever, photographers, so they could actually give like their personal insight, because we wouldn't have been able to, I can't really tell you the journey of a photographer, for example.
Exactly.
So yeah, we decided that, and then we didn't want it to be too long, we didn't want it to be too short,
because
mm-hmm. we wanted to also have people who were in uni or mm-hmm. in sixth form or working full time,
mm-hmm.
Who couldn't give up
so much of
who couldn't give up loads of time. And then that's why it became night school, because we wanted them to, like, if you want to have a full time job,
you can still do it.
So that's how the concept was formed. And the way we got like really good applicants and lots of applicants, because obviously we were working with like a full blown agency who had like loads of contacts with like trade press, whatever. And then we had our network for like the actual like talent that we were looking for.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to just stick to the tradition, because if you put something on Campaign, for example, or It's Nice That, or mm-hmm. just like places like that, there's only a certain type of people that will see it. People who already are interested, like, or already know what's going on in the creative industry. Yeah. Like, if I'm in sixth form, I'm not looking on It's Nice
That. No, exactly.
Like, I'm not going to do that. So we like put ads out in job centres and in sixth forms. Yeah. So we'd get people like outside of the people who already had a foot in the door, type of thing.
Yeah.
And then people who followed us as well, because people follow us for like art mainly.
Yeah.
So they might not necessarily know anything about
jobs in the creative industry.
Yeah, jobs in the creative industry, like in terms of like agency jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we just hammered out loads of ads everywhere, mm-hmm. for about 4 weeks, mm-hmm. that we spent.
Prior to it starting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe even longer.
Mm.
And then we try to keep the barriers to entry like minimal as well, like in the application process.
Okay.
So we only ask them two questions: how do you define creativity,
mm-hmm.
and what do you think you'll benefit from the program?
Exactly.
Yeah, so like for defining the first question, we were just kind of looking for as much creative expression as they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
so you could like write something which was great and like be as like expressive as you wanted, or you could like attach something, mm-hmm. that was like, this is this thing I've made, or like this illustration, or this music. We had loads of like music videos, illustrations,
so
little
cool
magazines, like so many entries that we weren't really expecting, because we had no experience.
Yeah.
And then we were looking for, like, in the terms of like, what do you think you would benefit from it? We were looking for specifically for people that weren't already established, because
mm-hmm.
like traditionally, if you're looking for applicants, you're kind of looking for someone who's like done loads of stuff.
Got a portfolio.
Yeah. And we were kind of anti that for this specific course, because we were looking for people who had the passion and had the like,
but not the resources.
But not the resources. Yeah. Because otherwise we'd just be pointless. So we did that, got the applicants in, and then had to like whittle it down. And then we had the course ended up being 8 weeks. And then each week we'd have a different person come in. So the 8 weeks was supposed to be 8 different like sectors of the creative mm-hmm. industry. So the first one was just a welcome. The second one was coming up with a creative idea. So what do you do when you get a brief?
Mm-hmm.
What is a brief?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was visual expression, writing your narrative. So that was the visual expression one was like photography, graphic design, writing your narrative, obviously like copywriting and mm-hmm. like journalism and stuff. And then we had strategy and finding insights. We had making it famous and culture. So how do you like do PR?
Mm-hmm.
Selling yourself. And another week, like production. We had production week. I think that's it. I don't know if I've counted up to 8. And then each session, we had a different mentor
mm-hmm.
come in from that worked in that particular field.
Yeah.
So they'd... The sessions were 3 hours,
yeah.
and they'd do like an hour of just talking about how they got to what they got, where they got to, what their job actually is, what does it entail, what's their day to day, and then the second half would be them. So at the beginning we set the night school as a brief to create like a manifesto. Obviously we then defined what a manifesto is, but to create a manifesto of like who they are as a creative. So the second half of the session they'd be working on that manifesto, whether it was like a video or like a book or poetry,
however they wanted to express it.
So the first session would be, this is what production is. The second half of the session would be, this is how you apply production to your manifesto that you're working on.
Amazing.
So that was like, and then like, so we had the graduate show yesterday.
That's so cool.
Was it yesterday or the day before? And I hadn't seen loads of the work because I had been like just so busy with like yellow stuff and like work.
Yeah.
And I was seeing it with everyone else, I would just cry it.
Yeah, it's such an emotional thing to see.
Yeah.
And also for them to see their own work. Mm-hmm. But also when you've put something on and you've been running around and organising everything to see what you've been able to inspire in people.
It was just so good. Their work was just so good.
It's amazing.
It was so good. I was very, very happy.
And so do you plan to do that again? Do you plan to make it
a recurring thing? We want to do something next year. We want to do, like, we were definitely, like, so passionate about it.
Yeah.
Like, more passionate than we expected to be. It really, like, encapsulated and engulfed our lives.
Yeah.
But, like, we loved it. So definitely would love to do it that. Again. Yeah.
And then, so for people who be listening who might not know, how did Yellow Zine come about, and how have you been able to navigate that with having a full time job?
So Yellow Zine, we started it 3 years ago, and
you and your brother.
Yeah, it was me and my brother. I was doing English literature and language at uni, so I was writing.
Yeah,
and he was a graphic designer already.
Okay, good.
And we wanted to create a magazine. We didn't know at that point. I knew that I wanted to have like my childhood dream was to be Anna Wintour.
Editor.
Exactly. Amazing magazine. Yeah. So I knew I wanted to create a magazine, but when I was younger, I thought it would be like fashion. But then by the time I was in uni, I didn't care about fashion at all. Like not in that sense. Yeah. In like trend forecasting and that type of stuff, and like I just didn't care. And then so we were both in the arts, like uni wise and like work wise, and that's what we became passionate about. And then like in our courses and stuff, like seeing the lack of diversity and seeing like not even just lack of diversity, but the like polarization of what was like classic literature and then what was like slavery literature, and then there was just like nothing in between.
No contemporary
exactly. And like even like, because my uni actually was all right for that. I went to Uni of Sheffield. Like I like my uni. Like we had like Chimamanda and stuff, and
Books.
Yeah, but like it was one particular module that had that, but the rest of the 3 years not dry. So much. So then obviously like we were passionate about like arts in general, it's like nice art, so we wanted to incorporate that in some way and like just make that middle ground happen. Then I spoke to my brother, and he had the same like
thoughts
and stuff, and then one of us, I can't remember which one, was like, we should create a magazine, we didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah.
Like, we just wanted to do something. And then we started the Instagram first.
Yeah.
Just to collate, like...
Like, curating.
Yeah, just to create, like, our visual, like, what do we look like?
Mm-hmm.
And try and see if people were, like, interested.
So what was that, sourcing, like, images from artists that you like?
Yeah, so it was just artists that we'd followed already and just posted their work.
Mm-hmm.
And
at that point, was it called Yellow Zine?
Yeah.
So you knew that you wanted to be a magazine. Mm-hmm. And so, because I think that's an important thing that maybe will help people in terms of when you have an idea, just taking one small step, instead of thinking, wow, I need to get a photographer and an editor and a copywriter and a printer and a manufacturer and this and that and the other.
Yeah. So for me, that's what scares me about having ideas. I don't like, so I've I've been in a situation before where like I'm having an idea with a friend or something, and like my friends are usually more like big ideas people, and that really puts me, like, it really scares me.
Okay.
Like when it's like, oh, okay, we need to come up with like this
and the name and the logo, yeah, and the branding,
like, write a business plan, and I'm like, yeah. That stuff just scares me. Other people are really good at it, and I'm just not at the get-go anyway.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to start straight away before I lost any sort of like momentum.
Yeah.
So started with the Instagram, just posted pictures of people. We didn't really have any sort of like tone of voice. Mm-hmm. Like it was just whatever. And like just let people see the page, let the page kind of marinate and see if people like were responding to it well.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were, so then, well, they respond to it, okay. I say they were, we had like 50 followers. They responded to it, all right, but we weren't doing it as a business or something that we wanted to do for monetary benefit. Mm-hmm. It was just something that we wanted to do because it's cool to have a magazine.
Yeah.
So then we started a magazine.
How long was that between just having the Instagram page and then starting the magazine?
I think about a year.
A year.
Yeah, I think cool. About a year. And then starting the magazine, like, so what did we do first? Did we look for printers first or did we actually make the magazine first? No, we made the magazine first. Mm-hmm. So I found, like, collated a bunch of artists that we liked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we kind of split in half, like, you come up with 10 and I come up with 10.
Okay.
And like we approved, which like made sure we were both on the same page, and then I would reach out to them and be like, oh, this is what we're trying to do, we want to like invite more like diverse voices. Yeah. And the word diverse makes me kind of cringe,
right? Yeah.
But
for the purpose of explanation.
Voices into the arts industry, and just a space where you can talk about anything. You don't have to, like, it doesn't have to be race centric if you don't want it to be.
Exactly.
Like, it can be whatever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And like the reception we got was a lot better than I expected, because especially it was artists that I had followed for years. I was like, they're probably not going to reply, but like, I mean, I don't.
This is the other thing that you find from meeting people, like even from doing these podcasts. It's like, Instagram puts up a barrier between you and another human being, where like they are literally, like, it sounds so stupid and so cliche, but it's like they are literally just another human.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no
security guards at their front door.
No, just all have crazy. Different talents.
Yeah, it's so funny as well that like good talent or like just good talent can make people seem exclusive.
Yeah.
Like, because you're good at what you do, you put hard work in, like, you're a painter, you paint well, and you're good at it, you're now all of a sudden, like,
a higher echelon than someone who...
you're now all of a sudden better,
who just does a 9-to-5, and that's what makes them happy.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing about
society,
the world,
general.
Yeah, so...
But anyway, so you got a good response back... Your idols that you were watching were hitting you up.
Yeah, they responded like normal people. And I was like, wow, what do you know? Because obviously we weren't paying them either. So I was like, I can't pay you, by the way. Just in case you think I'm going to pay you.
Yeah,
we have 50 followers, so I'm not going to pay. We had more followers at that point. I think 55. we had like a good response. And then I would send them all questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were doing this process for like 3 months,
mm-hmm.
send them all questions, get the questions back, I'd edit them into like third person type of shenanigan, and then ask them, because we had a theme at the beginning, it's a theme for the first issue, it was illustration, the theme was self-definition, so like what art pieces, because we couldn't commission them because we had no money, we couldn't ask them to make new ones,
so just...
Yeah, so like, do you have art that fits this brief?
Yeah.
So that's how. So we like started with a massive list, and then obviously some of them didn't have the art fit brief, so we had to like cut it down. And then they did, like, the ones that did, they send their work in. I do an interview with them.
Yeah.
Would then pass that on to my brother to like do all the art direction, the creative direction, and like make it all cohesive and a nice magazine, good layout. But we kind of. I don't know if there's any like traditional magazine frameworks the requests for the layout, but we kind of like did whatever we wanted because we didn't like there wasn't like.
And that seems strange to think that in a creative industry there is like a certain way that things should be done. Yeah. Of course, you can do it however you want.
We still till this day don't know if there's a way for it to be done. We still just do it however we think looks nice. So we had a full magazine now on issue, like you could see on issue. Mm-hmm. But now we had to find a printer.
Right.
We're just like emailing loads of printers. They're all really expensive. And we found one online printer. The catch with them, but it's all online, so you can't, there's no.
They won't send you something.
Buy just one magazine, which is like £40. Yeah, so like if you're ordering, you don't get a sample, but you can just get one magazine. So we found this printer who was like much cheaper, and then we ordered one magazine, and the bleed was weird and I think it was more of a design problem.
Okay.
And then
sent it back.
Yeah, and then we like spoke to them and they were like, yeah, cool, and then they sent us, and then we did the first order.
And how big was the first order?
It was like order 50.
50.
It was small, cost us £400.
£400. And how did you, was that from your savings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just mine and my brother's. So it's like £200 each.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, it wasn't just at the time because I was in third year and I was like,
oh, broke.
This is a bit, yeah. I was like, this is a bit sticky, but yeah. Fine.
Student loan coming
through. Yeah, exactly. So then luckily, the day after we got it was the same day as the very first Black Girl Fest.
Oh, no.
So they had asked us to, if we wanted to have a store there. And we did. And then the first batch was sold out that day. Like on the day,
that is insane. I remember like so you agreed to do Black Girl Fest before you had mags?
Yeah. We were like, well, hopefully it'll come good. Came like the day before, maybe 2 days before, and then like we were happy with them and we took them there. And literally, I remember with every order, I was so surprised before buying it. I was like, really? Are you sure?
Are you sure you don't want to just leave it here?
Yeah, and they're like, oh yeah, can I get one there? They'll say it's so casual, like it was a biscuit, and I said, like, you want to buy one?
It.
With money, okay. I mean, I guess.
and how much were you selling them for?
It was still £10.
£10.
It was £10 then. Actually, no. Now it's gone up to 15 because we weren't making any profit. Well, we still don't make a profit now. But were we breaking even?
Probably not.
Yeah, not really.
But that's amazing for the first. To like be at one such a like sick event.
Yeah, and it was the first one as well, so the energy was like
high. Everyone was excited.
Yeah,
like,
everyone was
where do
mad.
I go?
Yeah, it was kind of like cramped. Everyone couldn't really move around, but everyone was like dancing and buying things and dancing and buying things.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, it was really good.
And so you sold out that first one.
Mm.
Then what went through your mind?
And then, so we used the money we made from that one to then buy like a little bit, and then maybe because so we like the first issue we didn't do any sort of like batch order, we just like make money, buy some. And then it's only with the second on and like with the third issue that we were like just buying them
batch
all
order and then sell them as they go.
Exactly.
It's a pretty nice story.
Mm-hmm.
How have there been any bumps in the road, and how has fitting it around your job impacted maybe what you want to achieve or how much time you can dedicate to it?
Bumps in the road, plenty. One massive £1,500 bump in the road was the HMRC penalty that we got.
You got a penalty?
Yeah.
Why?
Because we didn't, when we first had the idea for Yellow, my uni have like an enterprise thing to support.
Yeah, a lot of unis.
Yeah, support really like cool. A graduate businesses and stuff. So like I wrote a business plan. It wasn't a very good one. My friend had done a business plan for her course.
Right.
Like for some like journalism thing. And I said, can you send that to me? And I just changed like the names around.
Right.
Because for her journalism course, she had to make a magazine. So I literally just copied her business plan. And then the guy at the Sheffield thing said to register his business.
Yeah.
This was literally on like the first day of the idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool, register his business. And he was like, and then I was really wary before we registered. I was kind of like, what is tax? I don't know how to do that. What is that? I don't really know what I'm doing. And he was like, it'll be fine. Like, you just start, you won't have to think about it for ages. So I was like, okay, ages. He said like 2 years or something. I was like, fine, cool. So I didn't think about it for 2 years. And then, obviously, after 2 years, I was probably supposed to think about it. But I had not thought about it for so long.
Yeah.
And then that enterprise address, we could also register as our business address.
Okay.
So all our letters were there. Which meant that if we wanted our letters, we had to ask them if we had any letters. Yeah. So we were getting letters, like just regular ones, and it was fine. Mm-hmm. Like they were just like normally like salesy things, mm-hmm. like not really relevant. Life was good. Life was okay. And then it just kind of went quiet for like almost a year. Like we hadn't got any letters. My mum was like, "Are you guys like sorted your tax stuff?" And I was like, "Well, they haven't. Like no one said. I think it's fine."
So in terms of what, getting a VAT code?
My mum was just like, "Have you sorted stuff?" I was like, "But I was like, we're not making any money, really. Like, do we have to pay corporation tax?"
Yeah.
So then, after my mum haggled me for a while, I then messaged one of the people at the enterprise place and said, "Have you got any letters?"
Yeah.
And then they were like, "Oh, we've actually moved buildings." And I was like, "What?" Because I don't know, I still stand by, I didn't get any email, but they said they sent an email, but I've not seen it, but cool. So I was like, okay, can you check the old building? And they, for ages, said they couldn't find letters. And then they found a letter that was apparently being passed around the uni, or something like that. It wasn't at the building, it was at somewhere else. Someone must have found it and taken it somewhere else and so on. Anyway, some weird, like, process, this letter had been on a journey. And then the letter now says, please respond, it was from HMRC, please, if you don't respond to this within 14 days, we will raise your case with prosecuting solicitor.
Okay, they mean business.
They meant business, and I was panicking, this wasn't even that long ago, I was panicking, I was like, oh my god, what are we going to do? But then I called them, it was after the 14 days.
Yeah.
And then I called them and they were like, oh, it's fine. You just have to, because it's not like we weren't like behind on tax or anything. It was that we hadn't filed, we just had to file an account to show how much you made and all that stuff. And we hadn't done that.
Right.
Just panicked. They said they were fine, said they'll cancel the prosecuting solicitor part. They'll slow down that process and pause it and give us 2 weeks to file our accounts. So still 2 weeks wasn't enough. So we had to get some sort of code. I couldn't get the code because you had to get it sent to you. The registration address was closed down, so we couldn't get it sent there.
Yeah.
And it takes ages to change your address. So all these things.
Blockers.
Yeah. So anyway, I had to call them and said, we can't do 2 weeks. They gave us an extension. And then, literally 2 days before the deadline, I went on, People Per Hour.
Yeah.
And then got an accountant, hired an accountant on there, and then... Luckily, we've been keeping books quite well, and everything was labeled and stuff.
That's good.
So they just I sent them all the account stuff,
yeah.
and they just sort it out, and then we filed our account. But because it was 6 months late, we got the fine.
Damn,
that was a big.
And did you even have to pay any tax?
No.
And so, how did you pay that money?
We paid it with Yellow's money, so it didn't come out of our account, so it was fine.
Okay, cool.
We just paid it with Yellow's money and took the L, and it was okay. But it was still an L. We weren't happy about it.
Yeah,
we weren't happy about it.
And so with things like producing magazines, which are very expensive, especially if you want to make a quality magazine, is the finances part kind of the most difficult part to kind of traverse? In creating the magazine, in terms of sales and margins and all of these things, and did you have a grip of that before you started?
Still don't. it was just. I think it depends on your purpose. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it to be a business, which is what we're doing now, then it obviously is a massive challenge to get to grips all that stuff. But if you're just doing it as a passion project, which is how it started, we didn't really care about that. We were oh, tax, oh, HMRC, oh, finance, no one cares. We were giving it, people were can I have it for free? We were okay, oh, then if you want it, you can have it, don't mind. Now we obviously do less of that. We do less of that. But I didn't answer your question about full time.
Oh, balancing with a full-time job. Yeah.
Um, So we started off as biannual.
Right.
When I was in uni.
Gives you a bit more time.
Yeah, but then now we're annual because I work full time and my brother works full time and we can't do
sustain
it.
That.
Yeah,
speed.
We can't sustain twice a year anymore. But I think I'm lucky because I have like quite a supportive workplace and quite a supportive like creative director.
Okay, maybe.
But so she's like always like, oh, what's going on? Like, how's it going? How can we like work your schedule around
that's
it?
Really
so
nice.
We have time to do it. Like, what events have you got on? Like, she's like really. Like,
I mean, I guess that's. It lends itself to you talking so much about it
when
you were getting
the
job.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is another thing for people listening to, like, not play down what you're doing, even if it's, like, right at the beginning, you've got 50, 55 followers, to talk about it as if you're doing it because you're doing it.
Yeah, but then the other side of that is, at my internship, they said, so at the end of my internship, they said they feel like I'm basically too passionate about my side project. Yeah, so it's my face and everything.
What? I can't understand. What do they mean? What do they want you to do after that?
I don't.
What was it interfering with your work?
No, they said that they see a spark in my eye, but they don't see a spark in my eye when I'm doing work.
Why are they sounding like a jealous boyfriend?
I was so confused. But like, yeah, screw them anyway. But.
Yeah, people can be funny.
People can be funny, but I think you're right, Justin, about being upfront about it, because then you can whittle down where it works for you and where it doesn't. Because if you go to a job and you tell them about like this thing you're really passionate about,
and
they don't support it, then it's
then
not going to work.
You need to go.
Yeah,
you need to head on
business,
out of there.
Yeah, your side hustle, your business, whatever, is never going to grow if where you're supposed to be full time doesn't support it, because you're sneaking to reply to emails from like your side.
So talking about figuring out where's the right place for you in terms of now where you're working and the vibe you get there, as well as where you are at with Yellow Zine, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're where you want to be? Do you feel like your work provides you with enough space to do Yellow Zine but also like teach you things and empower you, or do you feel like you want to be doing Yellow Zine full time, and is that a goal?
So I feel like I'm where I want to be right now, but not like where I want to be full
forever.
Stop. Like, I enjoy my job, like obviously I get paid as well, so like I couldn't do I probably like if I say if I was living at home, then I would happily be like, okay, I'm just gonna not work and do Yellow Zine full time and try and put my all into it. Because I don't have that safety net of like not having to pay my rent. I can't be like, oh, I'm gonna quit my job. So like, for now, my work gives me a good balance. It could be better, but like obviously they also have like targets to meet.
Exactly.
But my work gives me a good balance of feeling comfortable to do yellow work or like work myself around it, but the goal is to work on yellow full time, like within the next few years. Hopefully,
gotta put a number on it.
Let's say,
manifest it.
Let's say
four years.
Yeah,
in 4 years' time.
Yeah,
what's the day?
Oh my god!
It is Thursday, the 21st of November,
2019. So by 2023. Okay.
You'll be full time.
Yeah. Oh my god.
That looks good.
Oh my god, I'm scared. But that is the dream.
And would you kind of make it more frequent then, or would you keep it as an annual?
So it wouldn't. So we want actually the magazine to be a like a
extension.
Complementary part of something else.
Yeah.
Like what you were saying with Black on Black, we'd like to do something that was kind of consultancy-ish as well. Like somewhere that we'd like to do a lot of things. So we have like the night school stuff, which is all about mentorship and helping people get into the industry and like connecting people with mentors that they can have to like help them leave in the industry and stuff. So we want to maintain that side of things. Also, we want to do, because we don't do much of like creation of work right now, and we'd like to do like stuff. So like if like literally when you were saying Black on Black stuff, so like if a brand comes to us with like a brief, we can like
fulfill that.
Yeah, we can fulfill the brief, like put together a team that gets a brief of film, just like just so we want to do so many things. We want to do like loads of exhibitions, loads of events, we want to curate loads of exhibitions. Like what else? Obviously we want to have a magazine. We want to like be a site that people can like buy art from. We also want to be kind of like ethnic. It's nice that so like when you're looking for, like, we're doing a bit of that already on the website, but obviously because like we have like writers on like an ad hoc basis, it's not as consistent as we'd like it to be, but like we want to know, like we want to be like the one-stop shop for like when you want to know what's going on in London, or not even London, like anything that's going on in England or like the world eventually, like what's going on in the art world, like what exhibitions on today, what's on next week, and like what's the latest like just thing. We want to be able to like embody that. There's so much we want to do. We just need to
figure out how.
Yeah.
And so when you are thinking about all these things, how do you figure out, or how do you like organize your thoughts? Do you have a way of, because I know that for people who are creative and having to balance it alongside a full-time job, it can get so overwhelming that you don't do it. I think a lot of people understand when you have so many big ideas, and then you have so many big ideas that like you're so overwhelmed you just can't actually start any of them. And is there, do you have a routine, a mantra, not necessarily just for the work, but in your life that keeps you balanced enough so that you can do work and yellow zine at the same time?
I think I've quite nailed it, like getting out of that like kind of like phase, that like block just yet. But I do have, but I think this won't work for everyone, but I'd kind of let myself have that time of like putting my head in the sand and doing nothing, because I know it's something that I'm so passionate about
that you're going to do.
I know that I'm gonna do it. But like sometimes even when things are going too well, I'm kind of like I'm kind of like, these, either this is going to go like wrong at some point, or I feel like people now expect more because like this is going really well and people like expect this momentum to carry on. I'm kind of like, oh, like can we keep on with this? And I'm just kind of like, oh, I just don't want to do anything. So I'll just not do, I might, like, you'll see like on Instagram, we might not post for like a week or something, or like maybe even a couple of weeks. This is me just like burying my head in the sand, being like, I've closed. We are close to business. We're close to business. And then what I try to do is I try to do like the minimum thing to kind of get
to
me
keep
back
it up.
Yeah. So like I'll do an Instagram post. I'm like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And then like I'll be like, okay, so today I'm going to reply to one email. And there might be like 20 in the inbox, but I'm going to reply to one. And then like I might be in there and I'm like, oh, this one looks like
easier one to respond to.
Yeah, because normally like with me and emails, it's that... it requires
a headspace.
Yeah, it requires a headspace.
I mean, I literally have so many messages on my phone right now that, like, I'm sorry to my friends.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it requires a headspace.
But I just can't get into the headspace.
Yeah. Like, my advice, if it can be taken as that, is just to do, like, the smallest thing you can. If it's, like, literally, like, you even if you have to build yourself up to, like, just doing that one social post, like, you've began a journey. And, like... give yourself time to put your head in the sand, and don't feel like you always have to like force through that. Because you'll just burn out eventually. So like if you do feel like overwhelmed, take some time out, do things you enjoy, just like turn completely off.
For me anyway, what I feel like is I'm not putting out anything that I'm not impressed with, or that is subpar, so I would rather wait and then come and bang and just be like, here I am, than to try and use that energy to keep up something whilst trying to process my thoughts. And obviously, like, that can seem really unnerving, especially on social media, where you're supposed to be present all the time. You're supposed to have a voice all the time. But I think that depending on the kind of effect you've had on people up until that point, if you're genuine, if you're authentic, if you really give people value, they will still be there. I think that it does your mental better as well to just actually have that space to, even if it's just a week or a couple of days where you're like, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Because I just find that when you start pushing through things, then you start making mistakes.
Yeah.
And then you start regretting it. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, damn, I shouldn't do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like something that I think of sometimes is like, who do I owe
this to?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh, this needs to be done. But like, it is that, like, because there's, right now, there's so much going on and people are doing, people are achieving so much and doing so many great things. Mm-hmm. You kind of feel like if you're not working towards your great thing, you're falling behind and everyone's going to be like way ahead of you and you're still going to be like trying to play catch up. But like, I don't owe you this. I don't owe anyone.
No.
I don't owe anyone success. Like, it's
fine.
It
takes a long time to feel like that. Yeah. And I think most people in this space can relate to wanting to catch up, and I definitely felt like that. And before I went away, it was like, am I really gonna do this? Like, this is a failure. Mm-hmm. This is not where I want to be. People are out there achieving stuff, and I'm here not doing anything. Yeah. But I think the thing to remember is that everyone is on their own journey, and everyone is going at their own pace. And Yellow Zine is not doing what another magazine was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And you don't know that they didn't have a long quiet period and now all the projects they were working to were coming to fruition in a short period of time. Yeah. And so moving on kind of from that to in the, it could be the creative world, the tech world, whatever world, is there any one person or any company that you look to that doesn't give you that anxiety feeling, but actually really inspires you to continue doing what you're doing?
It would probably be Live Little.
Live Little. Yeah. HGC's in your field, like, in writing.
Yeah, because before Yellow Zine was even my idea, I was already, like, very gal-demmed up. I was already very much into it. And it's just, it's just everything about it, and it's just the sense of, like, truth and, like, genuinity that I still, I think the brand still, like, owns. And they've done so well in, like, such a short period of time. And obviously there's, like, loads of hustle that's behind the scenes. Yeah, 100%. And, like, I'm not, like, like, obviously, like, that's true and that's amazing. It's just, I don't know, she always seems so relaxed. What's good is that I'm in a lot of, like, random group chats with people. Like, I'm in a group chat with Liv, I'm in a group chat with girls from back. I'm just, like...
Well, like, WhatsApp group chats.
Yeah. So, when I need them for something, or, like, want to speak to them, I'll just, like, message them and be like, ask their email address. But, I mean, I probably, like, already know their email address.
But you're just asking for, for courtesy.
Yeah, I'm just asking for courtesy, And, like, it's, like, it's never been... I've never, like, been, like, turned down to just have, like, a conversation. Or even if it's something they can't make it to, like, it's always, like great support from, like, the whole, like, community of people trying to get shit done. And it's like, I've learned over time that it's not as scary as it seems to be. Because, again, like, when people are doing well at what they're doing, they just seem a lot more exclusive.
Than they actually are in person.
Yeah, they seem a lot more exclusive than they are in person. And they're literally just good at what they do. Like, they're just good at what they do. So, like, the people I speak to often just respond like a normal person who's good at what they do. And it's never like a weird, like, facade.
Dynamic.
It's never a weird dynamic. It's always like a really, really normal.
So we've been chatting for a while. I think we've got quite a lot of
content.
But just want to end with one thing that I've asked every guest, and it's just, if you had one piece of advice for someone starting out in the creative industry, who is not necessarily, but more pertaining to someone who is a creative of colour, figuring out what they're doing, what would that piece of advice be?
So I know this because I said this to someone else the other day, like, group people the other day. So I think not even just, like, everyone, especially as a person of colour, especially as a young person, especially as a woman, when I entered, like, the, like, agency world, the creative world, like, outside of, like, the side hustling type of thing, like, professionally, imposter syndrome was my best friend.
I see.
She would follow me everywhere I went, you know, like, literally, like, and she was wrapping her arms around me. Like, I mean, still is. I still definitely get imposter syndrome. Like, it hasn't gone away. But what I'm trying to absorb is the idea that my perspective isn't like anyone else's.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be like anyone else's. Yeah. Like, no one else sees the world from my perspective.
Exactly.
No one else has the insight that I have because of, like, what I've been through and the experiences that I've had. I think when you get into the industry, or when you're working somewhere that's like male dominated, white dominated, like people much older than you, you kind of think that you have to sound like them,
look like them, talk like them, think like them.
Like, when I'm producing copy, I still find myself thinking like, oh, what would this person say? And like, how would they phrase it?
Yeah.
And like, what would, like, how would they look at it?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know how I'd look at it. Yeah. And my perspective is completely different from theirs.
Yeah.
And my perspective, it's important. It's just as valid as theirs. They have a completely different opinion to me. Their opinion's great and so is mine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, for me, it's just like to see and recognize and embrace the validation of your own perspective. And just be like accepting and proud of your own thoughts and your own experiences.
That is a really good piece of advice. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's been so good chatting.
We've been chatting for ages. I'm cozy, I don't want to go outside.
It is warm in here.
Oh my god.